KSCU Santa Clara presents Robots Attack. Movies, TV, video games, comic books, tech stuff, news, music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at Robots Attack Me, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Now, Robots Attack.
That's right. Welcome to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the underground sound. I am Joan. With me is
Caleb
and
Jason.
That's right. We're all together again this week.
Hooray!
We're all here together now.
That's right. All together now. And we're here to rock you in so many ways. You'll need like...
Let us count them.
You'll need a rocking chair. Wait, no. You'll need a
rocket.
A rocket.
Fly to where the number would be used in the galaxy.
You'll need to get that faster than light engine going to get there in time.
That's right. So yeah, if you aren't familiar with our show, we are Geek Central Talk Show here on KSU Santa Clara. We talk about tech, things like
space.
That's right. And
Drones.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, entertainment stuff like comic books, movies, video games, all that stuff.
The Geekiverse is a wide place, and we try to cover segments of it as much as we can.
That's right. So, gents, how have you been since last we spoke?
Been good.
Doing anything exciting? Anything new? Exciting and new. Yeah. Did you come aboard something that was expecting you?
No, not at all. In a way, yes, because I was sent an invitation to something called The Division.
The Division you speak of?
It's a fantastic...
Is it math?
Why are we dividing? Why can't we just add and multiply?
Well, it's not that sort of division. It's not long form, nor is it. Nor do you have to show your work to make the answers be correct.
And what do you have against math then?
Nothing, except the cover of the book.
That's true. They were never good.
I got to play that some. I'm sure we'll discuss that at length later. Or do we want to jump into that now?
You have it under the Geek Talk. So yeah, this is Geek Talk.
True enough. So yeah, Division is a lot of fun. To put it simply, the game like really hits a nice like. I only played a little bit of it because it didn't have as much time in it as others, but it is very much the best. My favorite parts of Dead Space and Destiny crammed into one game.
Okay, yeah.
Which is not to degrade either the other two. They're fantastic. We'll continue to play them, but that one is definitely like, this is a good combo right here. It's that the peanut butter and chocolate going on.
Yeah, we were playing, and I kept on forcing him to do like one more thing, like over and over and over again. I'm sure I was less than popular at the time.
No, that's fine.
But yeah.
What do you mean by one more thing? Like this,
basically, I realized that he hadn't encountered the dark zone.
Oh, okay.
And all of the mysteries therein, and I kind of messed around in a little bit. But
so for those who don't know what that is,
okay, the dark zone is kind of the PvP area of the game.
Okay,
in a way. It's still an open world scenario, but there's basically bigger, tougher bad guys and better loot there. But it's supposed to be that area has been so inundated with the germs that ended up wiping out the city that anybody who has anything to do with it and all of the stuff that you find in it is considered like really toxic and unhealthy.
Okay.
And so filthy. You end up having to go through like cleanup procedures in order to get in and out of the place. And those cleanup procedures aren't good enough for the things that have like stayed there for long periods of time.
Oh, okay.
So you have to have all of your stuff airlifted out of it that you find there.
Oh, okay.
And that's where it ends up becoming a fairly interesting scenario, because mm-hmm.
that's where the PvP kind of comes into play. Okay.
It can show up almost anywhere in the Dark Zone, but that's where it's kind of going to focus, right. Probably.
Basically, if you decide to pick a fight with fellow agents, basically there's all of the real people are good guys and all the NPCs are bad guys, mm-hmm. just as far as like beginning. But at any time, you can turn on any of your fellow real people and just try and take their stuff or just take them out for XP.
Gotcha.
And as well as like a special type of cash that's unique to that area. And so that's always a possibility, but it's interesting. When I first started it, like, everybody was off the leash. Like, people were shooting each other like crazy.
Yeah, not surprising.
Yeah. But when we were playing the other night, mm-hmm. like, everybody was completely and totally behaved. Like, nobody was shooting at anybody.
We all pulled back into behind cover and just hung out. Like, they shooting at, no, we're all cool. But everybody's cool.
I think part of it, too, was I'd figured out some sort of safety procedures to get in and out of the situation a little bit easier without triggering people to like, we'd better shoot him type of thing. Mm-hmm. So basically, if you are a smaller team and you see a bigger team, you can kind of sneak into the situation and kind of catch them off guard and use the airlift to get your own stuff airlifted too. And if you manage to do that, it ends up being fairly safe, just because people can confuse you with their own party pretty easily because you're all like regular agents. So if they don't identify you quick enough for you to get your stuff onto the chopper in a way, which is actually fairly quick and easy, it ends up being fairly safe. And then once your stuff is gone, there's not much reason to kill you because the XP isn't as good as the stuff. And so,
gotcha.
So yeah, especially with the ability that I had this big old tower shield, like a riot shield. So I'd walk in there all nonchalant, pop my stuff on there, and then pop out a big riot shield and slowly back away.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. One of my coworkers I was talking to him about it because he also played the beta.
Oh, okay.
And he was saying that at one of the locations near one of the drop points, there's a gas station. There's like a group of NPCs that tend to congregate there.
Oh, okay.
And
We encountered them.
We did. And he and some of his friends decided to take out the NPCs. Well, while that was going on, another group decided they would do the same thing. And so you ended up with firefight. And the way they actually, because the world is very large in terms of like how complex it is, they also have a very good physics engine, including bullet physics. So like if you get a ricochet and it tags someone else, you all of a sudden are now a rogue agent. And then everyone turns on the rogue, and the teammates defend the rogue, which makes them go rogue, and you just end up with a huge, like, they had NPCs plus agents all trying to get each other at the same time. And he said it was a pretty wild moment in the game. I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. I am sort of glad that didn't happen, because that was later at night when I got to that place. And I was like, I'm not sure I would have been up for that much of a firefight.
Yeah, you get a certain amount of, like, sort of freebie shots that the game's like, okay, well, that was an accident. But if you get them with two or three bullets from the same person, then it'll show you as like an enemy combatant. And it ends up being a really interesting kind of balance to it, because as soon as you become an enemy combatant, you show up on everybody's maps. And it's literally open season on you. And everybody in the Dark Zone can come hunt you down. And it turns into you trying not to shoot anything and stay as quiet as possible for as long as it takes to have a timer countdown, kind of like in GTA.
Okay.
If you made cops angry or whatever. So it's sort of the same deal, except much more difficult because you're surrounded by actual people instead of NPCs that aren't quite as smart.
Do you think it's this sort of system is set up or do you think they need to rebalance some things, tweak some things, or do you think
I'm sure it needs tons of refining, but mostly it's just the most interesting idea that I've seen in a long time.
Okay. It seems like the base of it's pretty solid. They might just need to, you know, polish some of the edges.
I get, like, for an example, the ricochet thing. I mean, do you think that's something that's like going to get annoying really fast that they should address rather quickly, or do you think that
they'll probably need to tweak the number of quote unquote free shots that before you start turning rogue,
like a percentage of health depleted or something like
or
that,
or number of shots directed kind of thing, like because they're tracing each of the bullets because it has to hit the target. So, I suspect that if like you know they can see you've targeted this person's also an agent, unless you've completely lost your mind and you're not playing the game correctly anymore, you've probably turned yourself into a rogue agent. You want to take them out. So I suspect that will probably get cleaned up real quick, my suspicion, because I think that fan outrage over that will probably escalate quickly if it doesn't get balanced at least a little bit. It seems fairly... It's pretty fair as it is right now, it seems like.
Okay.
But...
Yeah, I mean...
There's always room for improvement.
I think the reason why everybody was going nuts at the very beginning was that everybody was brand new to it.
Yeah.
And so once people are aware of how everything works, it seems like they tend to try and fight fair and not pick on people or anything like that. But it's still an option that you need to be aware of. I've read plenty of things about people trying to go solo and try and get in on somebody else's airlift. And somebody realizes that they're not part of their team, just turn that around and shotguns them, and then takes their stuff and hooks it on the airlift themselves. But yeah, it's also interesting because some of the stranger airlift areas, NPCs will actually jump in and kind of invade the area.
Oh, okay.
And so that ends up being kind of an extra layer of it also, why you'd want to try and team up with whoever's there. Because I ended up coming across a couple of people that were doing that actually after we were playing.
Oh, okay.
That there's an airlift area on top of a roof. And at any point, a bunch of fairly tough NPCs can come wandering into that area.
Mm.
I think it's supposed to be like one of their home bases or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And
makes sense.
And so, yeah, I walked in just in time to kind of save these guys. They might have pulled out of it, but they were surrounded by like big, tough purple guys, which is kind of the second toughest of the color coding thing. And one of them was almost knocked down, but luckily pulled out my sniper rifle and took out one of them.
Nice.
So yeah, they were back in business. And yeah, I didn't get shot on that one. I think they were fairly appreciative. But I was able to scoop up all of the stuff that the NPCs dropped too. So, and that's the other thing too, that all of this stuff seems to work the same way as Destiny. All of the items are unique to your world instead of like Borderlands, where you're kind of fighting over stuff or have the possibility of having bad blood between people because of it. I think we ran across one thing where it didn't work that way, but I can't remember what it was.
I know, but that if you hit the resupply box, like the whole squad gets resupplied.
That was actually really nice. I had no idea about that. But yeah, that's
handy, so you don't have to each go up there.
Yeah. Right. It's really tempting to have your least experienced person hang back next to a resupply box with a sniper rifle and be able to top people off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Unsurprisingly, my favorite weapon thus far in the game is shotgun. Because shotguns are my favorite sidearm in Destiny. I'm like, the cover system is actually quite good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I've only played a little bit of cover shooters, aka the Gears series.
Mm.
And I felt like this cover system, obviously it's a newer game. The refinements are quite nice. I only got stuck once because of cover, but that was because I made a mistake.
Mm.
As opposed to like, oh, I'm not sure how this works anymore. Like they really try to make it clear where your character is going to go when you change cover locations.
Yeah, a little highlight is nice.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Also the trace of the line on the ground. Like if you can't see it sort of looks like I do want to go that way, so I'm just going to start with that.
Yeah, the one thing that we kind of stumbled on too that should have been really super obvious for us, since we're both kind of Destiny fans, and it's right in the name of the game that we were playing. It's basically, oh crud! Now I can't remember the guy's name.
Oh.
Anyway, it's that author that the entire series, like Rainbow Six,
Tom Clancy.
It's right. Tom Clancy's Destiny. Is mm-hmm. what it is. And I didn't really realize it until it was... Like, I started off with the same problems that I had when I was playing the Rainbow Six games, is that when I was first starting and I didn't have weapons that I was comfortable with, I was like, oh, I don't know. I might actually hate this game. But the second you start getting into your comfort zone with stuff that seems to work for you, that's when it really clicks and it feels... It makes it feel more like a real-world type of scenario, just because you can imagine that being exactly how it would be in real life.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you have a weapon that you don't know how to use, you are not going to be a happy camper in a like survival type of scenario.
Yeah. Speaking of the real world, if you want to listen to KSU even when you're not in your radio, you can stream us whenever you want at ksu.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website. Never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip.
You can find us faster by searching for our call letters, KSCU.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you gents weren't alone since they extended the beta by a day. So, mm-hmm. It was due to popularity. So,
which, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
It's it shows us a lot of interest in the game. And the AR map and like the HUD system in terms of like the menus, it's like, yes, this feels so nice. It pops up like next to your character. Like they have the little armband thing where you kind of do the interactions. But if it was like this is the part I love about the interface of Destiny. They do still have like the window that's always up that shows like your current bullet status and things like that, which
very Dead Space.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of nice. Like it takes the shooter information, puts it around your character as opposed to at the corners of your screen. So it's a very smart way of putting the focus on the character and the character in the environment, as opposed to okay, I need check my map at the left. Nope, okay, and everything. It's like it's all right there. Very smart.
Yeah, I really like that the visual customization is independent of armor. Also, I ended up finding like a white parka that I liked a ton because it's sort of like halfway blended with all of the snow.
There you go.
And that's the other thing. Oh my goodness, the snow.
The reflections and the sound design of like the environment is par excellence. I'm not sure I've seen better environments in a game system like this. It's just like,
if you ever have the chance to look at like either sunrise or sunset, reflecting off of one of the city streets, just take a second because it's kind of mind blowing. I've never seen them pull that off before. It's like perfect reflections. It has like all of like the water and like the snow melting into water, and not just that, like not just a shiny puddle, mm-hmm. but where the water has kind of absorbed into the asphalt also.
Okay.
So it's like little dry spots. It's just like, how the heck did they even do that? This seems impossible. But yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So in short, we like it quite a bit.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
You got to play some of it also, right?
A little bit. I played the alpha, so I dabbled a little, but I was like,
he's one of the alpha dogs.
I played this already, and if most likely I plan on getting the game, I don't really want to play it again, like the same stuff, because it looked like it was the same stuff. So, but I did do something else. I watched a movie called Ex Machina.
Oh,
you guys ever seen that?
Yeah. As did I, actually.
That is a weird movie. That was weird. I don't
what
know.
What do you mean weird?
I don't know.
Precisely.
At the end of it, I wasn't sure if I liked it or not. I was just like, well, yeah. It wasn't a bad movie or anything like that, but I'm like, I don't know if I, like, can, I don't know. It was one of those.
Yeah.
It was just so weird.
There's literally nothing likable in the entire movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All the parts were.
At least by the end, there's nothing likable in the entire
movie.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, okay, well, that's. Okay.
That's probably like a spoiler right there, but
I won't really go. Did you see it or no?
I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list of movies to check out because it got like
You should check it out. It's just it's weird.
Yeah.
It's not
if it
it's from not what I expected too much. Like,
right.
Yeah, from but what I want to say any more because then it would spoil stuff.
From what I've heard, it's a much more philosophical movie than the posters would lead you to believe. Like it kind of unpacks like. Spend a little more time unpacking what an AI interaction might be.
It depends. Like, if you really want it to be, it could be, but it doesn't. It's like, it kind of like throws out some of that stuff, but it's not really like, it doesn't dive into it too deeply unless you like are one of those people that wants to analyze like every single like detail, like sentence, like.
I feel like by the end, everything is so clear cut that it kind of nullifies a lot of the thought process that you could have had during the entire thing.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
But maybe not.
I would say pertaining to like the situation at hand, but I guess kind of like the overall sort of ideas that Poe Dameron.
And that's the other side
to,
of it is
General Hux. That's funny too.
Yeah. Talk about a role reversal. I'm not sure I ever liked Hux all that much either, to be honest. I don't remember his name in that. But yeah, he was more likable.
Yeah, there just wasn't anyone in it that, again, without going into too detail, but like, the two human people, like, there's nothing. It's just I don't know.
They're not very redeemable, or are they just
It's just
Poe plays basically like a big high end tech guy. Like, he supposedly wrote a code to make up a very, like, the most successful web browser in the world at age, like, 15 or something like that.
Yeah. Mm.
And so he got rich very quickly and tried to figure out, like, all the coolest stuff that he could do with that. And they kind of introduced this about halfway through, but it shouldn't be a big spoiler, is that he ends up leveraging that into trying to create AI.
Which is not unlike what Google's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apple and
everyone
else in big data.
But it's funny. He sort of does it kind of the way, like, Batman style. From Dark Knight.
Okay.
He basically does it completely and totally illegally.
Okay.
And he even says, like, well, I mean, yeah, even there's a ton of people out there that even knew I was doing it, but they couldn't say anything because I caught them doing it first. And so
it was basically like everyone else is doing it, So if they come after me, they admit that they're doing it also.
Right.
So
okay.
It's like, you know, no one's going to squeal because then they're also in trouble because they're doing it too. So, but yeah, I would say I'd still keep it on your list. Like, still check it out. It's like a well-made movie. It's just, it was just weird.
It's like, interesting.
It's one of those ones you probably watch it and then be like, okay.
Well, that was the thing.
It's got pretty decent visual effects, too.
They did a good job with the...
I think it was a fairly straightforward visual effect that they used, but it worked flawlessly.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, doing it well covers a lot, even if it's a simple thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it does a really good job, too, of, like, the seeing... like without the skin and then with the skin. And then like when you start to see the parts where like you're used to seeing skin. And then when that part is gone,
yeah,
it's like, whoa, it just looks so.
It's jarring.
Yeah. Yeah. The robots, for lack of a better word, it's like, oh, like you can see it's just weird. It's one of those movies. It plays on certain little like feelings inside you. So it's one of those ones, like, I can't really imagine, like, maybe you could watch it a couple times and still kind of get some of the effects, but, like, once you kind of know everything, it loses some of that, like,
that's going to be how it is, but.
But, yeah, I'm still glad I watched it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
cool.
But, yeah, that's the main different thing that I did. Played more Just Cause 3, of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Saturday we all hung out and played some billiards and bowling, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, at the time, I think I mentioned to you, like, every time I do bowling, I end up having, like, the next day a gigantic leg ache.
Mm-hmm.
Did you?
And... on Sunday, I was like, hey, I don't feel anything. I think I might have got around this. No problem. And I was all happy. Mm-hmm. I go to work this morning, and my leg was just completely... It was like a piece of wood. It was so stiff. And, yeah, I don't know how the heck that happened, that it, like, skipped a day. But, but yeah, it was fun, especially since I was running late and I was like trying to rush to the studio. It was like trying to drag my leg behind me. It was all out of breath.
Why wouldn't you work with me?
Yeah. Yeah. I was getting some weird looks. I was moaning a lot.
Oh my.
Oh my.
Had like moss green makeup on.
Oh. All right, well, that'll do it for our little geek talk, and then we'll jump into the watch party, but we'll take a music break first.
Yes.
Sounds good.
And of course, what we love
is for you to participate with the show, and that's happening right now. You can, the show is happening right now, and your participation can also happen right now.
Right now.
You can go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme, and you can... at reply us through Twitter. You can comment or post onto our Facebook page. It's awesome. Like it. You can get news updates. Both places will be updated as we go through the news later on. Mm-hmm. You can see the visuals of the stuff we're talking about. It's fun. It's good times.
That's right. Yeah. If you played the Division Beta, let us know what you thought. If you saw Ex Machina and thought that our thoughts were completely insane.
If you played
insane,
Ex Machina.
All those things.
Or watched the Division Beta.
Yeah.
Either way.
Yeah, either way, because, yeah, Twitch, you could watch someone broadcasting Division Beta, so.
Exactly.
So there you go. All right, let's take that music break and then come back with our watch party of episode 3 and 4, Devil's Part-Timer.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll be back with more Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at RobotsAttackMe. Email them at RobotsAttackShow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at RobotsAttack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to KCU Santa Clara with more Robots Attack. We are now in the watch party.
Yes!
We're going to discuss episodes 3 and 4. Take it away, gents.
So, in case you're just catching up, the show is called The Devil is a Part-Timer, and the basic conceit is that the devil from an alternate dimension, as we can tell, has been transported to modern-day Tokyo Earth and is working at a proxy for McDonald's. And life is
McRonald's.
Strange. McRonald's. MG yeah. Ronald's. It's kind of brilliant.
so far, yeah.
Yeah, so far so good. We're only 4 episodes in, but it's only 13, so while there is still time for it to mess up horribly, there's also not so much time that they have to stretch things out too far, thankfully. And episode 3 is titled The Devil Goes on a Date with His Junior in Shinjuku.
Very specific.
Very specific. All the titles are very specific, which is kind of interesting. I actually thought this episode was kind of fascinating because you get insight into a little more insight into how the hero Emmy thinks as well. Like her That's character true, gets yeah. fleshed out a fair amount more, and sort of who she is, where she came from, and why she is the hero of the world was.
I think that might be mostly the next episode.
Yeah, which episode was the one that like it shows the other place when she's a little kid and like the farm?
I think
with
that's
the dad.
4.
Is that 4?
I could have sworn that was 3. Let me check the description again and you guys.
Yeah, because 4 description here in the aftermath of the cave-in, Emmy sees a side of Mao that's doesn't jive.
You're right. I have a little bit confused, but her role begins to expand on this one, yeah. And also, in this one they definitely she gets a sinister voicemail effectively at her work. Someone calls in and like threatens her, which is kind of interesting.
And
threatens the devil at Mao at the same time.
Yeah, things start getting interesting. There seems to be more magic in our world than was let on initially, and we don't know exactly where it's coming from at this point. But before all of that, it effectively ends up being that the Chiho character, who is a coworker of the devil, at McRonald's, was that it?
Mm-hmm.
That she convinces him to go out someplace to hear her out on something that's been messing with her head.
It's the earthquake stuff.
Yeah. She's been getting kind of premonitions of the earthquakes, sort of.
Yes, and that's to explain what the earthquakes are.
Yeah, she's like hearing stuff, right? Or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, because apparently the earthquakes are a scan of Earth plane from their native plane. And it's when these two worlds touch that the magical forces like interact with the nature of the fabric of the universe, and it turns into an earthquake on our side.
Right. And we as the viewers end up finding out that what's actually causing this is the hero character's friends trying to get information and eventually try and come to Earth, but the other characters don't really know that at this point. They just know that somebody's trying to come through.
I would say what it definitely has, like her character is kind of the stereotypical of like, oh, I like this guy and I'm really nervous. Like,
classic high school schoolgirl thing.
Yeah, she's definitely that character. I think what I liked about what was a nice little twist for me was what's his name? Just so we don't have to keep saying the devil, because it's
Mao.
What's the other one?
His general.
No. Like, what's his other? Because I thought did they just call him Mao? I thought they call him something else. Like, anyway,
Sato.
Sato. Like, he just kind of is just like rolls with it as far as like, yeah, this is a date. I got no problem with that being a date. Like, we're in other animes, but, oh, no, this isn't a date. And then there'd be this, like, awkward stuff between, and you're like, all right, I've seen this in 1,000 animes. It was a nice twist. They just skipped all that, and just he was just like, yeah, sure, this is a date. I don't care. Like, that's cool. All right, yeah. I mean,
yeah, it was cool, and she's cool. It's the general and the hero that are flipping out.
Yeah, yeah, they're
that was
like,
actually kind of nice.
You can't. Yeah, like no, you have to wear something different. Like you have this. It's like, oh, okay. And
it's like, sure, I'll wear something. But wait, are you accusing my fashion sense?
Yeah,
yeah. I love that the devil apparently doesn't have fashion sense, and that on top of it, like since he's totally shrugging it off, like, okay, fine, I'll wear it, but whatever. Nobody else is going to care about this. And the first thing the girl mentions is about his clothes. And she was concerned that he only wore the less desirable brand of clothes.
Yeah.
Which I totally wonder if it was some play on words of some popular Japanese brand.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Probably something along the lines of the Gap or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like this show always like halfway feeds off of the classic anime tropes, but the other half of it is kind of diffusing it from an opposite direction a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it pretty interesting.
I did like that what her dad was like the cop who he like brainwashed.
Yes. Right. Like, okay, and that's the other thing that I sort of wonder about, because okay, he's not going to take anything about her feeling romantic feelings towards him seriously because he feels like it's a carryover of the brainwashing thing, which I think might be a jump to conclusion that isn't necessarily founded. And so I'm really interested to see at what point maybe he doesn't necessarily think that, or if it ends up constantly being a thing, like, oh no, she just feels this way because of magical stuff. And so it's sort of interesting too, because in a weird sort of way he has an extra bit of morality about it that you wouldn't expect the devil to have, that it's like, well, I'm not going to take advantage of.
Well, that's the thing that Caleb and I were talking about last week. We mentioned that it was like when that's what I was trying to think of, like, his other name instead of just saying the devil, because, right, like, kind of like Western culture, yes, in our sense, it's like when you say that, like, you instantly think like a certain way. So it's like, he's not that devil, quote unquote.
Yeah, he's not the creature from Legend, played by Tim Curry. It's not that guy.
Yeah, it's like the show isn't portraying that, quote unquote, devil. So it's that's one hard thing, like when we talk about this, like I don't want to throw people off. They're like, wait, what? It's like it's not quite
the Western construction of what the devil is. It has bits of that, but it's definitely more the Japanese or the Asiatic version, where there's spirits. They are all called demons or devils, but they're not all evil.
It's like, it's kind of like they took a big grab bag of stuff and kind of like molded into some things. I'm just trying to say, like,
yes and no, just because the next episode gets into that quite a bit more and kind of establishes why he is or was bad and so on. And so he's obtained a ton of humanity just already by him being stuck in the situation that he's in.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish they would have invested like a little bit more of the very beginning of the show in showing where he was really bad, because everything that we learn from the hero effectively says that he was like the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it ends up creating a lot of really interesting morality things about, like, if people change, how much value does that have compared to the bad things that they've already done and so on? Especially considering that these are, we're talking about creatures that are supposedly like probably thousands of years old. So,
So, and then in this one, like, I think is it towards the end, like when the earthquake happens, he like kind of transforms back in, like, he gets a little bit of his sort of previous.
Gets a fairly substantial kick to his power, and he outright has his, like, demon form again.
He sort of hulks out in a way.
Yeah.
He's like, full-aged. At the beginning, he's, like, really hulked out, and he, like, slowly loses muscle mass over time, which is kind of interesting, too.
Yeah.
And yeah, he full on has like one of his horns during it also.
Yeah.
And yeah, but basically with his new demon form, or with his regained demon form, he ends up, instead of deciding to try and regain power with it or anything like that, he actually saves lives with it.
Yeah, he protects all the civilians that were in the, yeah, in the building.
Which ends up creating like the interesting stuff in the next episode, because it's the hero trying to come to grips with not just that he hasn't been doing all this evil stuff, but that he actually did something really good.
Yeah. So. And speaking of that next episode of Devil's Part-Timer, mm-hmm, and the watch party here on KSU Santa Clara on Robots Attack, should we jump into episode 4?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's a good transition to episode 4. Which is called The Hero Experiences Human Warmth. And I thought this one was actually kind of interesting because it, for a number of reasons, but it definitely expands who Emmy is and why her beef is with Sato. Why it comes together the way it does.
Yeah.
Because it's revealed that she had an idyllic childhood. And the generals came and essentially annihilated her town, her home life. But before that, she was taken away by the effectively the church of that world. Yeah, kind of more like the Catholic Church because of the robing and stuff like that.
It ends up playing towards a fairly typical like anime deep fantasy trope, who is that,
yeah,
you have like somebody with mysterious, possibly like either demonic or angelic background, and with mm-hmm. her it's supposedly angelic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What her mother was an angel or something right, along those lines. And so mm-hmm. she's like, she's the only one that can wield the power to actually take on the devil.
Right. Which we found out in the first episode, she does quite well later on.
Yeah. She chopped off one of his horns. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she gets taken away, that's when her father gets killed and the whole farm and all that gets all burnt. So she never gets a chance to see.
Which we never see. I mean, it's just described to us. And she's apparently never seen either. It's just she found out that that's what happened afterwards.
Like, I'm never able to see my father ever again, thanks to you. And,
mm-hmm. and all, yeah. And also, like, it is interesting, like, because, like, it With the explanation of where she comes from, it's like she now has a rather distinct emotional detachment from almost every other character in the world, except for Sato in certain ways, because like they are the most alike of anybody else on this plane, and even on the last one, like because like they're not, neither one of them is fully human.
Yeah.
And you mean like, and also like over here, she's not really like connecting with anyone, whereas mm-hmm. he kind of is, like way more than she is. Like she's basically spending all of her time like just watching him, like waiting for him like mm-hmm. to flip right. and go crazy and start attacking and stuff when he hasn't been doing any of that. And meanwhile, her coworkers are like, hey, why don't you come out to lunch with us? Hey, why don't you hang? And she's mm-hmm. like, no, I can't. I got to do this. Like, mm-hmm. la, la.
Right. Although in this episode, she does actually end up at her coworker friend's apartment. And
wasn't it because of something though? Like something.
Yeah, because of the earthquake, she couldn't, she couldn't go back home. Like there was like, it collapsed one of the subway lines or something like that. So she was stuck there.
So it was, I mean, yeah, so it was sort of like forced. It wasn't really a
willful thing, yeah, but it is sort of like opening her back up to the fact that there is a condition beyond being the hero that she can occupy as a person. And that's, I think, the thing that this one's like reestablishing is that she has a personality and a personhood that isn't defined by her title, which is what she was in the other world. Like over there, she was the hero. That was kind of all she was. Like that's all they wanted her for, and all they trained her to do, and all she's really been doing since, like, she was taken so it's sort of interesting. Like now she's becoming more open. Her heart's opening up, and like the devil's been hedonist for so long that now he's like learning responsibility. It's like they're kind of like reversing their orbits a little bit.
Well, and it was interesting too, because I mean they kind of do the typical sort of action movie thing where there's not enough time, there's not even enough time to explain why there's no time to explain.
No, there's,
which I'm sure maybe people recognize where they came from if they're familiar with us.
Was it in this episode or the previous one where they do? I think it's on the news or something. They do make reference to the them getting shot at.
That was the previous episode.
Okay.
Yeah, the police are basically handling it like a sniper investigation.
Okay. Yeah, and like both Sato and the general show up on TV just like nonchalantly in the background, like, oh, what's going on? You know, Emmy's like, what are you doing? Yeah. Why are you showing your face in public?
Well, and where I was going with the no time to explain thing was that when Emmy actually confronts the devil with, like, oh, you did all this horrible stuff, blah, 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 like that matters. his response, and he doesn't have time to do much more than just give this response, but it was fairly telling for how little there was, is he simply says, well, I didn't understand humans all that much back then.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just kind of makes sense if you've been told your entire life that your entire deal is that you're supposed to dominate everybody and you have the power to do it, you probably would do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Yeah, it's as the thing goes, the plot thickens and the characters grow, and I find that a nice refreshing change of pace too, because sometimes you get these characters that are just like one notes throughout the whole show, like running gags kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of the plot thickening, I mean, the end of this episode, we find out who called Emmy and sent the message, and yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah. And also the a couple of the hero's friends, like they were in transit to Earth as well.
Yeah.
Earth realm, so.
Right. So yeah, the opening for the show basically shows off that more of the hero's friends are going to be regular cast, but it doesn't show any of the devil's friends at all.
Mm-hmm.
Devil's friends, quote unquote. Yeah.
Devil's generals, let's put it that way.
And speaking of generals,
right,
who shows up?
Lucifer. Which isn't our devil. That's not my devil.
See, it's not the Christian devil.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just the name of one of his generals, which I think all of his generals are different versions of the devil name, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Near as I can remember.
So yeah, it.
And so that's just interesting because he's where in the other it was like he was working for him. This it makes it seem like he kind of
he might
want
to take him on.
Yeah, he wants to be in charge.
But part of that seems to be because he seems to have a lot more of his power intact than the
Sato.
Yeah, does. Sato. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, so be curious to see, like, I'm sure perhaps in the next episode or the one after that, explain, like, how he's able to have his power. So, like, was he actually here?
Mm-hmm. How is he drawing power from?
Yeah,
yeah, like, there's
all these questions and more will be answered in a future episode. Hopefully,
hopefully, yeah. Sometimes plot lines show up and then just vanish for no apparent reason.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's gonna be interesting too. Like, for whatever reason, the earthquake seemed to boost Sato's power. So I wonder if there's going to be an accompanying thing where what's her name, the angel girl, finally
Emmy.
Gets like a boost here and there, and we'll end up finding why each does whatever.
Well, yeah, because each they call it the sonar. Each one's a ping, like it's almost like the other world is like flicking the fabric between the two places. So it's like there is a transfer of energy if you like apply Earth physics to it.
Earth physics.
And you understand magic way too much. I am highly suspect of
fantasy
you now.
Physics.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for this week's watch party.
Mm-hmm.
That was episodes 3 and 4. So next week we'll discuss episodes 5 and 6.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we want you to, you know, if you feel so inclined to
join in.
That's why we're doing the watch party. We want you folks out there to kind of participate with us, watch it with us. We just watch the next two episodes. We don't jump ahead. That way we can have, you know, not be tainted by what's
to come.
Coming, what's to come already in our discussions. So yes, please, join us. And of course, Caleb, how can they participate?
That's right. You can participate with us and in the future and right now by going to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme. You can leave comments. You can like the page. You can post to the page. It's good stuff. And if you want one place for definitive information about all things Robots Attack, go to robotsattack.me. And that is where you'll find everything you wanted to know, past, present, and possibly future. We'll see. But definitely all everything else is there.
All of the information that we have to give.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Data bio.
That's right. All right, let's take a quick music break, and then we'll come back with some new releases.
Hooray!
And, of course, later on the news. All right. You're listening to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara. We'll be back with more right after this.
News.
That's right. Welcome back to Robots Attack here on KCU Santa Clara. We are now on the news. That's Newsom, gents.
All right. As if you are familiar with the show, you know one of my favorite subjects is space. And part of that is, in the news at least, is kind of this rivalry that's going on between Elon Musk's SpaceX and Jeff Bezos, Bezos's Blue Origins. Blue Origins, when recently made quite a splash for themselves by landing one of their booster rockets back on Earth safely after sending it up to its the peak of where they're trying to get it, and it landed down exactly again. Then they scanned it, tested it, retrofitted it, and they launched it again and landed it again.
Ooh.
So definitely credit where credit is due, because that is no mean feat. Good job, Team Blue Origin. Now, this is in no way a spite on the group on what SpaceX is doing. They're just they're facing a different set of challenges in some ways in what they're trying to do with their floating retrieval system as opposed to Blue Origin's, which has landing clearance out in open space in Texas.
Mm. I've actually heard of some responses from Musk about the entire thing too.
Yes,
he hasn't been completely gracious about everything.
Oh no. Well, to be fair, Bezos was pretty snotty with his first tweet. So there's been a little bit of spatting going on between the two of them, which is amusing, but it seems like it's more or less in that kind of competitive ribbing as opposed to like outright slander fests that some of these these CEO squabbles can turn into, but they seem to be somewhat in good humor about the whole affair, in which Bezos said, yeah, we landed our rocket and everything went fine, and to which Elon Musk replied, yes, but we're trying to send ours into into high orbit and beyond.
Right.
You're just trying to hit low high atmosphere. So, yes, they're going after very different goals, and as such, they have different challenges.
Mm.
So, this is not a, well, obviously, this Blue Origins is better. It's like, no, Blue Origins is also doing very good work. It's just different, very good work. But still, credit where credit is due. They launched a they reused a rocket.
Yeah, that's
and that
that's most impressive.
That is quite impressive. And when other groups do the same thing, this will and this proves the viability of reusable rockets.
Yeah,
because that's one of the things that we've haven't really had up until now. Like the Saturn V's and all the amazing rockets that sent us to the moon and launched some of the more impressive the satellites like Voyager, which is going off out and beyond the solar system. Like those rockets, like you, there wasn't really any way to reclaim them. You might find the pieces again, but they
were pre-recycling days.
They weren't really reusable. So this is a vast step forward in earthbound in space travel, and it will only improve, and so that will probably make space tourism, one, more viable, and two, it will make getting things up to the space station for probably, or and mining of, like, the asteroid belt and stuff like that, much more of a thing that might actually happen within one or a generation or two. Like, it's really cool and exciting, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting to just kind of seeing some insight in the difference between the two personalities kind of helming this.
Because,
yeah, Musk is like basically shooting for the stars.
Quite literally.
And and is sort of at the detriment of actually being able to accomplish his mission of being able to actually reclaim these things. But, yeah, the other side is actually concentrated a little bit more on reclaiming.
But at the same time, like each of the SpaceX landings that has gone on, they each hit the target, although they didn't, you know, succeed in the retrieval.
In being recoverable.
Recoverable. But like, they're still like, they are really quite literally that, like, this close, like holding my fingers a very small distance apart, to probably actually achieving what they have set out to do, which is
close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. This is neither.
True, this is closer to atomic weapons, but that's a different issue entirely.
Atomic grenade.
Right. Okay, maybe that counts.
But yeah, the either way, this is like really exciting. And to me, each of them, while they're trying to achieve different goals, are pushing each other to achieve better. So that's the main thing, and I think it's going to be awesome.
Well, here's something that's awesome that doesn't require any pushing anyone out of the way. If you want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip.
Find us faster by searching for all call letters, KSU. They are unique to us on the globe.
Okay. I'm sure that everybody is familiar with the blight on our skies at this point, and that is the rising popularity of drones in all of their different types and shapes and sizes.
Do we need to get Donnie Drone Killer out there to get them?
Right, and for all of the areas that don't have a Donnie Drone Killer, they have their own plans on how they're planning on dealing with unwanted drones. And we've talked about stories about Japan basically making drones with nets to catch other drones, I thought was pretty good.
There was also a group that made a quote-unquote drone rifle, which is a giant high-powered radio transmitter, which will transmit either the signal to land immediately or to return to owner.
Also a very interesting angle on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Dutch have taken the Gandalf angle.
Oh,
they're training eagles.
Oh, I was going to say, you shall not fly.
Right. Yeah, sort of. It's actually a tech firm that's doing it in combination with law enforcement, apparently. but they're actually training eagles to go after these things, and they have a fair amount of video already posted of eagles successfully just snatching drones straight out of the air.
I remember
and carrying them around like they're nothing.
Wow.
I remember seeing like footage, a YouTube video of this, like before it was like the... Like, I don't know if it was these guys or not, but it was just like a random footage of an eagle. Shwoop! He grabs the drone. And yeah, like, hey.
It's just like it's nothing. And yeah, it's pretty impressive. I mean, already people have cited that there might be animal rights stuff involved, just because drones do have a bunch of little blades flying around and whatnot. But the other side of it is that eagles in particular have very strong, very scaly claws, specifically for dealing with dangerous things, like snakes and whatnot.
Right.
And so they're actually saying, according to the Dutch government, these scales actually keep them completely safe. So I'm sure they'll keep a close eye on whether that's 100% true or not. I don't think they've bred eagles big enough to be truly compared to the Gandalf thing, but they might need them eventually.
Those might have been a fantastic conceit for storytelling purposes.
But you might
purposes.
Need those eventually just because there is a company actually right. trying to make
the human-scale
drone for a drone taxi service.
I saw pictures of that from CES. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah. It doesn't look real at this point, but you can see how it might be at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, eventually we'll need Gandalf eagles.
Okay. There was some news out recently. It sort of dropped, kind of had some unfortunate timing with a certain passing of a legendary artist named David Bowie. Mm-hmm. Kind of came out a little bit around that time, and it was people right. looked at it and were like, what is going on? You know, they're like, wait, they're making a sequel to Labyrinth, or they're making a remake. You know, mm-hmm. like, oh, we're going to remake it, or, you know, this, that. Like, well, what's going on? Why would you do that? Well, fear not, everyone.
Mm.
It's not being remade.
Oh, good.
Okay.
Good.
Just rebooted, right?
The screenwriter Nicole Perlman clears up all the confusion. So many were upset over the idea that the studio was only remaking the film now to profit off of Bowie's death a couple weeks ago.
Right.
It kind of dropped, like, you're like, whoa, this is some bad timing.
Mm-hmm.
But Nicole Perlman, writer of the upcoming movie and best known for her work on Guardians of the Galaxy, took to Twitter on Sunday to clear up some of the confusion. Quote, guys, please don't fall for all the clickbait. Perlman wrote, no one is remaking Labyrinth. That movie is perfect as is. That's her quote. Mm-hmm. Perlman added that she and the Jim Henson Company started working on a continuation for the movie back in 2014, years before Bowie's death.
Mm.
Quote, I would never seek to profit from Bowie's death, she wrote. Perlman didn't provide any detail as to how the continuation would incorporate the original 1986 film, but there's a good possibility that the movie will focus on Toby, the brother Sarah was trying to save from Bowie's iconic.
Interesting.
Jareth the Goblin King. The movie is currently in development, but so it's going to be, it seems like it's going to be more of a sequel, not like we're remaking it, rebooting
right.
it. So, you know,
that's good.
Yeah. So for everyone flipping out, I know a lot of people, especially because of the, the passing of David Bowie, it was like, we're already sad about this. And now you're telling us you're going to remake
right.
Labyrinth, but fear not, everyone. And it sounds like it's in good hands too.
Yeah.
So they're like, they really liked the movie Labyrinth, so hopefully they
they'll do it well by it.
When the combination of these two things popped up on social media, I ended up asking my circle of friends the question of, well, who would you use to replace the irreplaceable David Bowie as the Goblin King?
Who would be the Goblin King?
And it sounds like the popular vote is Lady Gaga.
That name did get floated out there. It'd be interesting to see what actually happens.
Yeah, she.
But rest assured, our dance magic will always be Bowie's dance magic.
That's true. That's true.
So from the magic of David Bowie in film to watching
something that doesn't have any magic whatsoever.
No. Not really, but it does deal with how you can consume movies and television in your home.
In a magical fashion.
It might feel like magic because they might, if they can get this to work. The FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, has put forward a proposal to make the next set-top box that you get from your cable company not one you get from your cable company, because almost all of those are wretched.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's trying, like, there was a...
Is the FCC trying to do something actually useful?
This is the second time they've been pushing out a more universal set-top box. The first time was the cable card system, which would allow specially coded cards to be placed inside specially designed tuners so that you could, like, have a computer that, you know, if you fought tooth and nail with your TV provider, you could get that.
Yeah, or like TiVos and stuff like that.
Exactly.
Use those.
Mm-hmm. So this is effectively the next step up from that, where it's like you won't need to fight with anyone to get it. You will just have a device. You subscribe to your cable, your television provider will, you know, maybe have a list of approved devices or whatever, but there'll be a way to use the device you already have in your house, be it a Apple TV or an Xbox or a PS4 or any of the numerous other ways to get non-cable box, non-satellite box stuff onto your TV.
Interesting.
There will soon be a way to do that. They're working on a way to do that without having to deal with another box in your stack, which will make the One Guide on the Xbox One even more useful.
Yeah.
So there's no solid word yet on whether this will actually happen, but it has been proposed and it looks like it might have a chance of actually going through, so we shall see.
Yeah, it seems like they're starting to finally maybe be open up to things when they're realizing that a lot of people are cutting the cord, quote-unquote.
Yeah. Yeah, people are running to Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and just skipping the cable company.
Okay, well, this is something firmly seated in reality right now. And it has to do with robots and Japan.
What? But Japan is the magical fantasy land.
And lettuce.
Wait, lettuce out? It's cold in here?
Well, maybe if it's iceberg lettuce.
Okay.
I don't know how that works. I don't know how cold it needs to be to raise iceberg lettuce. But it unfortunately doesn't look like iceberg lettuce according to these pictures. But Japan is leading the way in completely robotic farming. Basically, they're trying to make a farming system that's completely indoors, that cuts out all of those pesky humans, that allows them to mass produce and grow tons and tons of lettuce.
Huh.
And so far it seems to be working pretty good. It works almost completely off of, not like humanoid robots per se, but basically like auto manufacturing style, robot arms and whatnot.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it uses it for doing everything from planting seeds into kind of a styrofoam-like substance that ends up sprouting into a hydroponic-type medium. And each row of this stuff is monitored completely and totally and grown completely with LED light instead of your good old-fashioned sunlight.
Huh.
And apparently it's going really well. I would have thought that growing things in sunlight would be more efficient, but apparently not. Because it sounds like they're planning on taking this to bigger and bigger futures.
Does the article say how long they've been doing this?
Let's see.
Because, yeah, I'd be curious to know.
Yeah,
it sounds like it's fairly new. It looks like they have the operation up and running, but it's not a functional business until 2017.
Oh, okay.
So,
Yeah, is hydroponic growing has been kind of a like how do we feed the growing population of the world kind of thing, and that's been one of the things that's been pushed forward. It's like we don't have enough land area to feed everyone, at least depending on who you talk to. And other geologists are like the topsoil is disappearing and all this other stuff. So it's like we have to find other ways. And also, if we ever colonize another planet or attempt to colonize another planet, we're going to need something like this to support the colony.
Right. We're going to need some lettuce and potatoes, Mr. Martian.
Yeah.
Couldn't bring any lettuce seeds, I guess. Whatever.
Well, okay.
Potato Man.
So, let's see. Let me do my PSA before I do the story. It's the classic, are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? You can join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving foster and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join them at sjanimaladvocates.org or look for them on Facebook. All right, last week... Mm-hmm. I did a story on Doctor Who, specifically about Stephen Moffat, you know, leaving in 2017. You know, one more series / season, you know, depending upon your region of viewing. And then he would take off, turn over the hands to the Broadchurch guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks like there's also going to be a spinoff for Doctor Who. Doctor Who spinoff Class coming to BBC America.
It's been a while since we've heard more information about this.
America's going to get taken to school after all.
Interesting.
Back in October, this article's from Nerdist, mentioned that there would be a spinoff of the science fiction favorite Doctor Who called Class, aimed at young adults. The series is going to premiere on BBC Three, which is a pretty low-tier channel in Britain, and many include were left speculating whether the show would be available in the U.S. at all. But at the Television Critics Association, it was announced the show will indeed come to BBC America. BBC America's president, Sarah Barnett, announced the news along with a couple other series coming to the network in 2016.
More Doctor Who spinoffs.
Fill that void. Class will be an 8-part series and is being co-produced by BBC America. It marks the first television screenwriting credit for Patrick Ness, an acclaimed YA author of such books as the award-winning A Monster Calls. The series is set in Coal Hill School, the same place where Clara Oswalt was a teacher, and is being executive produced by Doctor Who's Stephen Moffat and Brian Mitchin. Of the new gig, Ness says, "I'm astounded and thrilled to be entering the Doctor Who universe, which is as vast as time and space itself." He later joked, "I can't wait for people to meet the heroes of Class, to meet the all-new villains and aliens, to remember that the horrors of the darkest corners of existence are just about on par with having to pass your exams." Class is the first Doctor Who spinoff series of the Stephen Moffat era, following in the timey-wimey footsteps of post-Watershed Torchwood and kid-centric The Sarah Jane Chronicles, both created by Russell T. Davies. Class does not seem to be including any characters that have appeared on Doctor Who, though whether they any show up in the 8-week run will surely be something to watch. So it will premiere this year, so it'll be kind of the, besides the Christmas special, it'll be the only Doctor Who sort of thing this year until 2017, the last Moffat run. So there you go. Fear not, Whovians, you'll get an injection of Doctor Who, kind of, by going to school.
Oh, that sounds all sorts of way. Yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting, but it'll be mostly because, how do you make that part of the Whoverse?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, at least more than it already is, I should say.
And speaking of things that are spinning out and spinning upward, Microsoft, you may or may not realize they have a really, really cool research division.
I don't believe it.
It's not just the their AR device, the HoloLens, they have been doing all sorts of wacky, cool, like just far out cool technology research that has mostly been research. I mean, it ends up like going into other products, but rarely is these cool things turned into a project. You may remember the that thing they made a while back that would tie an Xbox 360 with a Kinect and a high definition projector and change like your project onto the room itself and create environments that were affected by the visuals on the game.
Xbox room with a view.
Kind of like that. And that's not the only one.
Xbox project your life.
Sure. They've done a lot more than that. It's just that's the one that I can think of off the top of my head.
Xbox, more images than your living room has room for.
And the... but like they're now... Satya Nadella and others are trying to push these research projects into becoming actual products. And the HoloLens is one of the earlier versions of this push. And there's a lot more in this less... quote-unquote ambitious technologies that are just really cool that they're working on too. But the fact that they're actually going to start productizing the things that have been up until this point been mostly pure research is just really rad. Like the HoloRoom thing, like, and some of the other stuff, like I wanted that to be a real thing, but
yeah.
It was only ever a prototype, unfortunately. But now these prototypes may someday show up in your living room or on your desktop or something like that. So that will be pretty cool, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully one of these days projection technology will get a little bit cheaper. But
eventually.
A massive argument that we had over the weekend would say that that's probably not going to come over.
They were throwing fists at each other. Beer was flying everywhere.
Right.
I was scared.
It was crazy. Man, do not get us started on DLP. Oh, man.
Oh. Bring it up again. Why don't you?
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm stopping it there. I'm going to start more bad blood with other people
instead. Get us out of here, Jason.
I'm going to talk about GameStop.
Okay.
Okay. The company everybody loves to hate involved with video games because... it lets them trade games in. Anyway. GameStop announced relatively recently that it was actually going to start developing its own games. The internet kind of erupted with WTF. It makes a lot of sense because they're going to eventually run into some problems with downloading versus physical copies. So if they can get people into the store with their own games, that's a nice little lure. But the bigger chunk of WTF was with whom they were making this game. And it's a fairly big developer that you may have heard of before. A little developer called Insomniac Games. Yeah.
Really?
The scope of the game doesn't look like it's the biggest, like, giant sci-fi brawler shooty type of game like you might expect it to be based on their other games. But it is going to be a side-scrolling Metroidvania-style game in a very interesting environment, and that is under DC.
Looks cool.
Not under Washington, D.C., under... the sea, I should say. Anyway, the game...
Under the sea.
Right.
Under the sea.
The game is called Song of the Deep. It's based loosely on Irish legends. It has kind of an art style that is a little bit Miyazaki. It's kind of cool. It just looks like it's going to be a fairly interesting 2D shoot 'em up type of thing that you end up... switching between roving around the underwater world in search of your lost father, who was a fisherman, both in a submersible and in like a wetsuit type of thing.
Okay.
So obviously changes the gameplay quite a bit.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Whichever one you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the art all looks really solid, and I'm actually fairly interested in seeing what it all turns out like. So it is going to end up being a digital game also, which might kind of mess with GameStop's plans, but at least they're being included on the ground floor with some of the digital stuff now, so mm-hmm. that might be part of their plan too.
Yeah.
But if you want an actual physical copy, GameStop is the exclusive place that you can actually get one.
So okay.
That's the rub. And plus, they ended up gloating that with the amount of GameStops that they have out there and with the thousands and thousands of people that they have working there and all of their advertising stuff, they end up being in a really good spot to push that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they probably have one of the better distribution networks, so to speak, of right now. Pretty yeah. interesting.
Yeah. Huh. So, yeah, I hope more of this stuff ends up happening. It sounds like Insomniac is actually really happy with the deal because, unlike being involved with other groups, they make it sound like they had complete and full creative control over the entire game.
Hmm.
Well, it makes sense that, like, if you let GameStop publish it, then, like, you know, it's like, hey, you guys have all these stores already. Like, you guys can handle that. And, like,
yeah.
We'll just make games.
It was like it was kind of like the deal with they did with Microsoft. Mm-hmm. Microsoft let them keep the IP for Sunset Overdrive. They just published it for them.
Right.
Like, yeah, you guys can keep creative control. Like,
this is your game. We're just helping you put it together and put it on the game system.
So that makes sense. Like, if GameStop gets into, like, publishing people's games, they can do those kind of things where it's like, well, if you want a physical copy, you can only get it out of GameStop. But there's thousands of GameStops everywhere, so it's...
You're never that far from a GameStop.
It does kind of seem like a smart move for them to, like you were saying, like... As more and more people are going the route of digital and kind of...
to invest in that end as well.
Yeah.
Clever girl.
Okay, well, we've only got a few minutes left, so I will...
Which is pretty good, because the protagonist is actually
is
a little girl.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I will wrap us up then with this day in history. February 2nd, right?
February 1st, yes.
That's right. Tomorrow is the 2nd. Okay, February 1st.
We don't want tomorrow's history.
No, we do not. And February 1st in 1536.
Oh.
The city of Buenos Aires, Argentina, was founded by Spanish conquistador Pedro de Mendoza.
Okay,
Then we jumped to 1709. Still pretty far back there.
Just a little jump.
Yeah, just a bit.
Just a hop.
Scottish sailor... Alexander Selkirk, the inspiration for Daniel Defoe's Robinson Crusoe, was rescued after 4 years alone on an island off the coast of Chile.
Oh, wow.
Then we go to 1848, still pretty far back there.
We'll get to the current day eventually.
We'll get there eventually. The Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo ending the Mexican War was signed. In the Treaty of Mexico, ceded to the United States a huge portion of what is today the American West and Southwest, including California and New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
So, hey, California, that's where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
then we go to 1870. The Cardiff Giant was revealed to be a hoax.
What?
Whoa.
Man.
Oh, man.
Then 6 years later, in 1876, the National League of Professional Baseball Clubs was formed.
Yeah.
Then in 1887, the first gathering at Gobbler's Knob in Punxsutawney.
Oh, whoa, you can't say that on the radio.
To wait for the groundhog shadow occurred on the first one in 1887. Then we jump to 1922. James Joyce's Ulysses was published. Then we jump to the 40s, 1943 to be exact. Nazi troops surrendered in the World War II Battle of Stalingrad. Then we jump to the 70s, 1971. Idi Amin became dictator of Uganda. Then 1980, the Abscam scandal was revealed. Then 1990.
So
we're sort
of. We might actually remember this one.
Mm-hmm.
South African President F.D. De Klerk lifted a ban on the African National Congress and promised to free Nelson Mandela.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. I remember that one.
Then, 2003.
Whoa.
Czech Republic President Václav Havel stepped down after 13 years.
Wow.
Long time to be president.
That is a lucky term right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Lucky 13.
Lucky 13. I've had enough. And speaking of enough, that's it for tonight's show. We want to thank you for participating and listening.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's never too late to do any of those things.
That's right. If you are going, wait, this is the end of the show, don't worry. Don't worry. Go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme. Both of those we will see your replies or posts if you do that throughout the week, like the Facebook page. It's kind of cool. You can also give us your thoughts and opinions. You can find all of the links to the stuff that we've described and the news section and some of the other things throughout the show that we've talked about will all be there. And if you want one place to find all things Robots Attack, that includes archives and links and show notes and all that good stuff, go to robotsattack.me. There you will find everything you need to know.
It's got it all.
All of it.
Got it all.
All right, that's going to do it. I want to thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time. Take it easy, everyone, here on KSCU Santa Clara, 103.3 FM, the Underground Sound.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.
Raccoon. Barada. Mixto.